The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Friday, Good Friday, Mueller Report Friday. Gary, good morning.
Good morning, and here we go.
The special counsel report outlines two main efforts by the Russian government to influence the 2016 election. First, the report details efforts by the Internet Research Agency, a Russian company with close ties to the Russian government, to sow social discord among American voters through disinformation and social media operations. The special counsel's report did not find that any person associated with the Trump campaign illegally participated in the dissemination of the materials. After reviewing these contacts, the special counsel did not find any conspiracy to violate U.S. law involving Russian-linked persons and any persons associated with the Trump campaign. Indeed, as the report states, quote, the investigation did not identify evidence that any U.S. person knowingly or intentionally After nearly 2 years of investigation, thousands of subpoenas, hundreds of warrants, and witness interviews, the special counsel confirmed that the Russian government sponsored efforts to illegally interfere with the 2016 presidential election, but did not find that the Trump campaign or other Americans colluded in those efforts. The report recounts 10 episodes involving the president and discusses potential legal theories for connecting those activities to the elements of an obstruction offense. The Deputy Attorney General and I concluded that the evidence developed by the special counsel is not sufficient to establish that the president committed an obstruction of justice offense.
All right, so there you go. Really not much new. I mean, some of the details, as we expected, of, you know, what the president actually said. You know, one of the things when they looked at the broad view for obstruction was the fact that, you know, even though the president said and did some things and had some untruths, to put it mildly, special counsel even had to make note. None of the redactions were because of, or the attorney general. None of the redactions were because of executive privilege.
Right.
Anybody that Trump had talked to, he gave full leeway to talk to the special counsel.
Outside of the small team at the Justice Department, there were no requests for redactions, and nobody was involved in the redactions. And except for people who had high clearance on committees on Capitol Hill, no one else has seen the unredacted report. Nobody, to this point, has gotten and exposure to
it. And during the investigation, the president allowed the special counsel to speak to anybody that they wanted to, except himself.
Mm-hmm.
But he did answer answer all questions, but they couldn't find anything on the obstruction of justice. As I have said to many of my friends, tell me where you have an obstruction of justice. Tell me specifically in the report where you could make that case.
Right.
Well, they could make the case. Look, I agree with Andrew McCarthy. The one thing that I got out of this was verification that Mueller was political. And Mueller was political because any prosecutor who basically puts in the exoneration, and we had talked about this early on when he said this does not exonerate the president, that portion of it, what the special prosecutor was doing at that point was something political, which was, I am putting the burden of proof on the president to prove that he didn't commit obstruction. That's not the job of a special prosecutor.
No.
That's not the job of a prosecutor. The job of a prosecutor is to look at the evidence and say, do we have enough to convict?
Remember when there was the back and forth on the questions, this would go back to early last year. There were back and forths, and we were learning from the president's personal lawyer what type of questions they might be asking. What did the president plan on doing when he was firing Comey? What was his intent when he fired Comey? There was clear at that point, if those stories were accurate and true, and there was an exchange between the Mueller team and the president's personal lawyer of that nature, then you can say, okay, they were clearly scrambling to find intent.
Right.
And you can also tell that the people, the entire Mueller team that was working on it, we don't know who worked on what and what was found where, but they went out of their way to show, Mueller actually went out of his way to show a couple of different ways that you could commit obstruction in this case, even without destroying evidence, and they went into that. But it gets down to the letter of the law and the one key word, corruptly. Anyone who corruptly, and we'll get into that definition at some point, but the word corruptly came into it, and it actually came down from a quote and an opinion written by the late Justice Scalia on a SCOTUS case, saying, you know, with corruptly, with that word in the law, that means that somebody was doing it for that specific reason. They were using their power to maintain their power. And I'm paraphrasing here, but that's essentially what you would have to show. And then you have to show intent to that end.
Right. You have to show a corrupt criminal intent. Mm-hmm. And there must be behavior of a criminal corrupt manner, which you couldn't prove either of those.
Right.
But it got down to when you look, for example, that they were trying to find, I mean, they were, it was what we expected, by the way, what we had said. We believe that what you're going to see in this is many of the attorneys and Mueller attempting to really try to come up with a theory to expand criminality that doesn't exist. For example, when it came to the Trump Tower meeting, they were trying to figure out, did you see that part, where they were trying to mm-hmm. figure out whether that could be a campaign violation.
Right.
It's like, what are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean a campaign violation? They're strictly, they're looking for opposition research. And what they were trying to make the case of is, well, yeah, but if you're looking for opposition research, you're looking for something of value.
Right.
And so if you're looking for something of value, that might be an illegal campaign contribution. But then there was nothing that was exchanged. And even if it was exchanged, they didn't know how they could monetize what the value of any information that they would get from the Russians would be. And I'm sitting here screaming, saying, yeah, well, then anybody who comes forward with any information to any campaign, if you're trying to make that case, Joe Schmo comes off the street. Mm-hmm. And says to you,
I've got a video of Bernie.
I've got a video of
dancing in his underwear.
Right. I got a video of Bernie. Do you want it? You know, you don't even have to ask for something, but you give them the video of Bernie doing something.
That's a contribution.
And the federal government's going to come back and say, well, wait a minute. That values your campaign. Therefore, there's an illegal campaign contribution. And you didn't report that you got that video on your campaign finance statement. I mean, the lengths that they went. They were attempting to stretch the law like it was never meant to be stretched before, right, which was exactly the worry that many people had. And I thought that campaign, trying to figure out that campaign finance violation with the Trump Tower meeting, was the ultimate of how they were attempting to find anything on Trump. I will say this, though. It's quite embarrassing that they actually left that in there, in my opinion.
That they put it in the report.
That they put that in the report, that they were headed down that path to see whether it was an illegal campaign contribution.
Hmm. Well, I don't know. I think if you look at the report as a whole, I think it's an embarrassment. I mean, what does it really say about, you know, all of the beating on the chest of James Comey on Capitol Hill, trying to maintain and protect the integrity of the agency and blah, 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 and this whole, and you could almost hear the music starting in the background and him standing up. You could almost see him grabbing a flag and waving it, and his melodrama was all a load of crap. And when you get through it, when you go through this report, time and time again, what do you find? What you find, the intent was a witch hunt. This big, broad scope based on nothing. A non-crime. No crime that's even identified.
To this day, we don't know what the identifiable crime was that they were looking for. And what the report shows is they took that general umbrella. And this is something that I didn't hear talk about yesterday, because this is the problem with it. Because if this is the case, then every president should have a special prosecutor. If anybody makes any allegation, we believe that the president somehow got the presidency in an illegal way, get a prosecutor, and just start investigating everybody and ask any questions from anybody in the campaign whether the president did anything illegally. You are as close to that scenario as I can possibly imagine with what happened in this whole escapade of the Mueller investigation. Mm-hmm. Because that's what you see. What they're doing is, it's not that they've got a crime and they're looking to see who committed the crime, which is what prosecutors do. Prosecutors just don't say, "Hey, Joe Schmo, there's a rumor out there that you committed a crime, a generalized crime, that you robbed a store. So we're going to go to everybody that you know. We don't know what store you possibly robbed. We don't know when you might have possibly robbed a store. We don't know what store you possibly robbed, but we are going to ask everybody and subpoena everybody you know to find out if you've ever considered robbing a store."
Yeah.
That's what it's like. To me, what happened, and I don't know how you could ever get it before a court, but to me what happened is unconstitutional, what they did. No citizen of the United States should be able to have a prosecutor just go through their lives without a specific allegation of a crime against them. I'm sorry, that's wrong. That's unconstitutional. I don't care whether it's the president of the United States. I don't care whether it's somebody that I hate, or if you hate the president, somebody that you hate, that you justify this kind of action. But it's wrong. And it's unconstitutional.
Yeah, what you get from this is a horrible injustice. Quite the opposite right. of what James Comey pretends to try and protect and maintain.
And that, to me, is the biggest problem. But go ahead. The media was going crazy. Keep going crazy. Give the Republicans every incentive now to act, to go in and look and see what happened in the Department of Justice, in the FBI, in our intelligence agencies. Let's go and find it. By the way, Kimberly Strassel also brought up what we have brought up before in a little bit different way in the Wall Street Journal, where she said, "How come nothing led back to the FISA warrant?
Right.
How come you weren't looking for that evidence? You know, why did you ignore that evidence? You know, why wasn't that in the report? How come that's completely missing?" And that's something that you and I have talked about, because mm-hmm. that is what a prosecutor, if you're a prosecutor, and we've said this how many times? 500 times in the mm-hmm. last year?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so, sorry if it sounds like we're repeating ourselves, but they keep repeating themselves, so we have to keep bringing up the points that actually matter in order to counter what they bring up. If the prosecutor's job was to find out if Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election, the best evidence that Mueller had, if you're an investigator, you say, okay, this is day one of the job. Where's my best evidence? Best evidence has to be in the FISA warrant application, because they were able to get a secret warrant to spy on the Trump campaign. There must be some damning information on Donald Trump colluding with the Russians. How come he didn't go in that direction? Why not?
Well, and you get into in the first section, when you're talking about collusion, the part that deals with collusion, you go to page 95, because the first thing I saw was in the index, Carter Page. I thought, oh, I'm going straight there. I went straight there. Well, it talks about the things that the investigators, that the special counsel's team said that he did. How did you know that? How did you learn that? That's my question. That goes back to that FISA warrant. How did you learn that? Because it sure points out some interesting dates in 2016, even after the election of how Carter Page applied for a job at, you know, with the transition team in November. This would have been, I think it said November 14th of 2016, and the whole thing. And I thought, no. Let's start at the beginning. How did you learn that? How did you get there? Because it states these facts, right? I mean, there are things that we already know. You know, the thing with the Russians, that's foreign intelligence. And there are a number of things that we won't ever learn about that process. But we're talking about an American citizen. That's what is different about a Carter Page,
mm-hmm.
Papadopoulos, or any of them.
They're American citizens.
These are American citizens here. And at that point in 2016, low-level operatives in a presidential campaign.
Volunteers.
So how did you learn that? Because if you want to talk about the Russians, great. All right. No problem with what you found, what you think they might be doing. Here's the thing. I built this huge high expectation that the Russians and probably even the nations that are friendlier with the U.S., are always doing something to influence the election, any election process, and the Russians are trying to cause chaos.
Let me make this analogy. If Mueller is stating the things that Carter Page did that came from the FBI, you know, from people he talked to in the FBI and the Department of Justice, which came from the dossier, then did the special prosecutor collude with the Russians in order to analyze what Carter Page did as part of the Mueller investigation, because the information he got was actually the disinformation propaganda from the Russians through the dossier? How's that for a mind meld for you?
Right.
We got a great show ahead. If you want to get in, we'd love to hear from you. Get in now, 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. It seems like the two things that were brought up, you know, if you look as one here from the Wall Street Journal, it talks about what they view as one of the worst things, the worst contact with Russia, was actually after the election and the whole Michael Flynn thing when they asked the Russian ambassador not to escalate after the Obama administration imposed sanctions for Russia's campaign meddling and making the case Mr. Flynn was undermining current U.S. policy at that time. And that's the worst thing. But that was after the election. And then he lied about it. And then Trump fired him. So you really can't make anything on Trump for that one. And the only other thing that they try to bring up for obstruction of justice as being bad was when he told his attorney, Don McGahn, to tell Rosenstein to fire Mueller. And McGahn said, no, he'll resign over it. And then he was talked out of resigning. And then the next day, Trump just seemed to forget about it completely.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so nothing ever happened there. Those are about the two worst things that you have, and neither are illegal.
Right.
The president did nothing illegal in either of those things.
Right. I wonder how long the energy on this goes. You know, you have the Democrats inviting Mueller to testify. We'll see where that goes. But how far, I guess, is the interest on it? For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
Well, the start to the weekend is going to see more severe thunderstorms for the south after moving through Texas yesterday. This early morning Friday, we'll see those showers having moved eastward, now in and along the border of Georgia and Alabama. And the likelihood of severe weather will extend all the way from the coast up to about Chattanooga. And we can expect a rough day of weather throughout the south today, moving through Macon and Albany, Georgia, into Atlanta later today. By your Saturday, we'll see those showers having moved again eastward and provide a good chance of rain for the Carolinas up through the Delmarva Peninsula and on into New York. However, the likelihood of severe weather will diminish somewhat as those showers, primarily in the east, will be moving through in overnight hours. With the exception of some rain in the state of Washington, the rest of the country west of the Mississippi looks gorgeous today with plenty of high pressure and sunshine. The National Forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
You're listening to Red Eye Radio from the Pilot Flying J Studios.
We'll be right back.
The Bonus Show.
This should never happen. I say this in front of my friends, Wounded Warriors, and I just call them warriors because we just shook hands and they look great. They look so good, so beautiful. But I say it in front of my friends, this should never happen to another president again. This hoax, this should never happen to another president again.
And that was President Trump after the report came out yesterday. If you want to get in, we'd love to hear from you. 866-90 Red Eye. Let's head right to you. We go to Robert in Chicago. Robert, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Yes, just like I indicated before, let's let whatever came out of the Mueller's report out to the public, and let's move this country forward. You'd be surprised. You have a lot of people who agree with Trump. But when you hide and you have people to come out and summarize what's in the report, we're smart people. Americans are smart people. Let's get what's out.
Okay, good. All right, good. Enough of the rhetoric.
No impeachment.
We understand. Enough of the rhetoric because we have gone through. We have gone through the report. You don't want to have a conversation because my point was going to be to ask you, okay, what is your point? Was he guilty of something or not? You don't seem to want to actually have a discussion. You want to just throw out something of a generic mindset.
And by the way, nobody's hiding, and there wasn't a summary. These are limited redactions. It's really unprecedented that we have this kind of access as a public report.
It really is. So I don't know where you're going. That's why we stopped you, because you're throwing out rhetoric and saying things that aren't true. Nobody is summarizing it. This was the Mueller report.
Mm-hmm.
And as they had to bring up, even to the press, that, look, there were no executive requests to redact anything. Anything that was redacted was either grand jury testimony, and Mueller's team helped redact the majority of what was redacted in that report.
Right.
So you sound like you're just throwing out talking points.
Well, sound like you're very disappointed. And you should be if you're on the left.
Yeah. We look at it from the facts of the case.
The media built up the hype. Your beef is with them, the mainstream media, that carried this on, this false narrative, this bogus narrative all along, and built up the hopes in people like you. And so if you have a problem, I'd call CNN. Ask them. Oh, I'm sorry. All they do is repeat what other people say.
Let's go to Christopher in Yonkers, New York. Christopher, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. My point is this. The FISA warrant, and this is where the momentum swings back, it should never have been issued. After 9/11, when President Bush was trying to establish the FISA court, the Democrats fought tooth and nail, and they said only under the most extreme circumstances and with the utmost scrutiny should these warrants be issued. And you used it against an opponent based on opposition research. This is not going to go away. That's my point. My question is, who are the judges on the FISA court, and how does the warrant get issued?
Right.
That's my question. Right. I'll listen.
Thanks, Christopher.
By the way, FISA court was not created by Bush. FISA court was created in 1978 by Congress. Jimmy Carter signed it into effect. You may be thinking of Bush and the Patriot Act,
right?
But that is the Patriot Act is, and that passage is different from the FISA court that was established in 1978. FISA court is just a revolving number of federal court judges, and the person who oversees the FISA court is John Roberts of the Supreme Court of the United States. Just so you know,
right?
And how does the FISA court work? The FBI goes to them and says, we need a secret warrant because we believe that this is part of national security or terrorism, and it can't get out. We need to keep these type of warrants secret because nobody can know what's going on because it is about national security, which is in essence terrorism. You have it because of the potential of terrorism, and that's why even the expanded use of this to spy on a president you really wonder what to spy on a presidential campaign. You really wonder what they used and what the actual FISA court judge now thinks about it, who actually signed off on the warrant. Now, the thing is, we don't know, because back in April of 2017 is when the FISA court officially rebuked the Obama administration for not following the rules and regulations that they had promised to uphold. And the FISA court said at that point, and this was work that was done by Sarah A. Carter and John Solomon when they were at CIRCA, was it?
Yes.
When they were at CIRCA. And when that came out, that was because right at the end, it was after the Carter Page warrant came out in October.
Yeah.
It was a few days before the 2016 election that the Obama administration went to the FISA court and said, you know how we promised to abide by these rules and regulations since 2011? Well, we never did.
By the way, that CIRCA report is 2 years old this month.
Yeah.
That's
crazy. You're right. Right about now it came out. Yeah.
April of
2017.
Yes. Wow.
So, but just so you know, I think you may be confusing the Patriot Act with the FISA court.
But you are right to question what the process is like. We've questioned that. Was it at that time some kind of rubber stamping? Because there are two different elements there that are conflicting in terms of what we know. The FISA court, you know, as you mentioned, Gary, on October 26th, the Obama administration goes before the court and says, well, sorry, we know that you told us to quit doing these things and overreaching going back to 2011, but we didn't stop doing that, and we're sorry, and bye.
That was, right.
That was because it was just days before the election.
Right.
So, but
and
so,
then they rebuked them the next April is when they came out.
Exactly. And so that's so when the court, you know, when you think of that, the FISA court rebuking the Obama administration, then clearly that was a pretty stern move. To what extent and what for specifically, we don't know. But then on the other side of it, as you just hit on something that I think there needs to be some emphasis on this. This was an American presidential campaign. This was not a law firm in, you know, wherever. It was not a, you know, like if Manafort in the private sector, or it was a presidential campaign. What consideration was there? What kind of conversation was there? That's what I would love to see. Aside from what was used in mid-October to petition the FISA court for the warrant, which was the dossier, and that's what changed. Remember, in the summer of 2016, they petitioned for a warrant on Carter Page and did not get one. And the key change there in October 2016 was the addition of the dossier. Was there, and we know we've seen the signatures and we for the petition for the warrant, for the application for the warrant. My question is, would they keep track, a court transcript of conversations around that? In other words, did the FISA judge?
No, they didn't ask. There was no conversation. Remember that came out?
Okay. All right.
There was no.
All right.
That
I
report.
About that.
Yeah. That
you're right.
Report.
No,
yeah.
You're right.
Remember that report?
That there was no conversation.
Yeah.
I
was going along with you, and all of a sudden it popped into my head. No, wait a minute. About 2 months ago, 3 months ago, a report came out that there was no conversation. There was actually no verbal conversation. They put in the application. It was signed. Boom.
So there's the other part of it. And we'd ask all along, yeah, is this a rubber stamping that's going on at the FISA court level? One thing that we have to compare, and there was a report that came out too, that and this was late 2017, mid to late 2017, they said the rate of issuance on FISA warrants had dropped dramatically.
Yes,
in 2016 compared to in 2017 compared to 2016. Was there a, you know, did Chief Justice Roberts enact a new policy? Was there some kind of reckoning? We don't know. We have no idea. But we do have that we can certainly point to that report.
Here's the question that I have. I look at a FISA warrant and see that you have, you know that ISIS is talking to somebody in the United States who's an American citizen.
Right, right.
You get a FISA warrant on that person. I've got no problem with that at all.
Right.
You're talking about a low level, a very low level member of the Trump campaign, a volunteer, didn't know anybody upstairs. As Carter Page said just what last month, he still never met or talked to the president, ever.
Right.
And you're telling me that no judge questions and says, wait a minute, is this terrorism? Is this really national security?
Right.
What it now this Carter Page, how did this whole thing start? A guy at a bar talking to somebody who also was a low-level guy? This is national security? This is terrorism related? I have a problem. Again, I understand that you need the ability in the modern terrorist world that we have today to do secret warrants. But I asked the question that you ask. After the rebuking of the Obama administration and the sudden drop in the approval of FISA warrants, did the FISA court themselves realize that they were being had by the Obama administration? I've got to ask that question. I think that question is imperative, especially since the FISA court rebuked the Obama administration and said they violated the rights of American citizens. Nobody's ever been held accountable for that.
And you know, you go back further to the summer of 2016. Why did the FISA court not grant the warrant on Carter Page then? They clearly had a concern at that point.
Yes.
With that application. So,
But you're right. There's the point. Was the point that they, and this is where we connect the dots. Because you say, how could you say Carter? Because the dossier, which was sold as legit intelligence, and as Rand Paul stated about 3 weeks ago, was pushed as credible by the head of the CIA. Was that why they signed off on it?
Right.
That they viewed at that time, all right, this is, and here's the other point too, though. Because here's the other thing where at that time, 9 months later. Comey was telling Trump, three times, no, we're not investigating you. We're not investigating you. Wonder if the FISA court thought the same thing if they gave that first FISA warrant and then the subsequent FISA warrants based on the dossier, which all was inclusive of Trump. That was all about Trump. When you think about it, that was getting to the point that this is worth getting a FISA warrant because this shows the president is actually colluding.
Right.
And if it's being sold by the head of the CIA, boom.
Yeah, right. There's your end.
God, I sit nervous. Wow. I feel like I'm doing an episode. This is Mission Impossible Conspiracy Hour.
Well, no, I mean, it's conspiracy theory. It's like some kind of wild and frankly, horribly written Hollywood script.
Tom Cruise. No, I'm not going to do that.
No, I'm not going to do that. That was stupid. No. We can write better than that.
I'll fly around a building with suction cups in Dubai.
Because nobody would believe it.
Right.
Oh, me hanging on the side of a plane? Yeah. Hanging onto the side of a glass building with suction cups in Dubai? Oh, people believe that. They'll never believe this.
I feel like picking up my gavel and just smashing it
right now.
But I won't.
No.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. Robert, Mark, Jim, Cletus, more. We'll get your calls and comments all coming up following top of the hour. And it's getting confusing because you and I we just are continuing our discussion off the air. Yeah, and all of a sudden right. It's time to go on the air and it's like, where am I?
Right. Well, there's so much to go through
to
here.
Digest. Yes.
And but it is, when you bring the, I guess, the collective report, the entire report together, really, I have to believe that the Democrats, the far left that was hoping for this to be something more, even after it was issued and the conclusions were released by Barr a few weeks ago, I think they were, well, let us be the judge of that. And there's still nothing here. Doesn't mean that they're still not trying. They were during the day on Thursday trying to make something of this report. But good luck with that.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning talking about the conclusion of the Mueller report.
Yeah, right.
Because that's what it is legally.
Yeah, it has concluded.
Yes, it has concluded. Politically, it might not be.
No, it won't be.
But legally, it is the end of the Mueller report. As I said earlier, the one objection that I have to it is the fact that Mueller played the game, which became public, that, well, we couldn't find enough evidence to charge him with the crime, but we don't exonerate him. And using that terminology to begin with is not what prosecutors do. That's when a prosecutor becomes political, because a prosecutor's job is simple. You either charge or you don't charge.
Right.
Your job is not exoneration. Right. But in the end, because what does exoneration mean? Prosecutors aren't in the exoneration business. Exoneration isn't even a legal term.
Right. Yeah.
And so when you see that, at that point, you understand that it is political. Because the only role of a prosecutor is to charge or not to charge. That's it. And what he did here was, in essence, try to make the public relations argument that the burden of proof on obstruction is to the suspect.
Right. Nope.
And it's not. The burden of proof is always on the prosecutor. It's the way the system is. We understand that after Kavanaugh, the Democrats are now concerned with the fact that there is such a thing as a presumption of innocence.
Right.
They don't wish any presumption of innocence to anybody who they politically disagree with.
Yep. It is, and they, again, and they argue in the same way. In social media and anywhere else, that their discussions are, well, prove that it didn't happen.
Right. That's not the way the system is.
Nope. No, you're making the charge. You bear the burden.
And as we said, we've gone point by point by point by point on this, legal point, legal points, legal points, legal points on the whole thing of, what he did on obstruction of justice. There was no obstruction of justice. There's none.
No.
There's none. Are there things that you hear from Trump that are distasteful? Yeah. if you're a Trump supporter, you say, why did he do that? That makes no sense.
Right.
We've said this before. He can be his own worst enemy with his own words.
Sure.
What did this report show? The same thing.
Right.
Does it show criminal or corrupt intent? No.
It even touched on social media and his activity on social media. But the fact of the matter is that does that rise to obstruction?
Well, look, you made the point yesterday that since, and we've talked about this before, the worst part of this president is his own words.
Mm-hmm.
Because he cuts his own case many times. He will take, within a period of hours, sometimes days, the opposite opinion of what he held the day before.
Right.
Now, the great point that you made is you said maybe that helped him on intent because nobody could figure out what his intent ever was because he would keep changing what he was saying every single day. So he even confused Mueller.
Well, because you would, in order for it to rise to obstruction, there has to be a you know, a number of elements that's involved. You know, even if he is trying to intimidate. Well, again, the definition, and whoever corruptly, that's how it starts. That part of that law,
right, right.
The intent is important. Is this the president on social media just mouthing off? Did he, could you say, all right, take those elements, right? Take all of, you know, print off all of his tweets. and then, because I don't know that he's erased any of them. They're probably still available, right? I don't know that he's deleted any of them.
Has Trump ever deleted a tweet?
I don't know that he has. But imagine that, you know, you've got all that in front of you, and clearly they had at least some of it in front of you. Then you could say, okay, his actions after that. What did he do after that? Did he actually, well, it goes back to the people freaking out saying, you know, the NFL gets tax breaks or the media, we should not allow the licensing of these news networks and everything else and all these things that he says in social media that are opinion and aren't followed through,
right?
With any action. If he tried to, then you know, in those cases, I don't know, go to the FCC or go and rewrite tax law in terms of tax breaks for the NFL. Then you could say, okay, well, he followed up on that, and that's not his role. In this case, if he had tweeted about something in terms of a James Comey, and then there had been some kind of, I guess, intimidation, saying something to the effect of, hey, I hope you'll go easy on Michael Flynn. And then later firing Comey, A, hope you'll go easy isn't intimidation. Sorry, it's not. The firing of Comey, what happened was way, way, way too late, in my opinion, not for the purpose of this discussion, but generally speaking, because he was clearly a horrible FBI director, and we had been saying all along that he should have fired him very early on.
Yeah, we said that week one.
And the president has the ability to fire Comey.
Well,
if he had done that, if he had fired Comey and then intimidated other people regarding the actual investigation, and they actually touched on this in the report, there's no evidence that the firing of Comey directly affected the integrity of the investigation.
And by the way, and you're right, that's also in the report. Barr talked about that. And the other thing that Barr brought up that I believe even Mueller recognized is that remember the original allegation. The original allegation was Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election.
Right.
That's what it was. Mm-hmm. That was the original allegation that got everything going, that had the world and Washington and the media and the political establishment completely frozen.
Mm-hmm.
And Barr made the great case yesterday, and Mueller, like I said, even attributed to this. That paralyzed the administration completely. That allegation that you are a treasonous president who colluded with the Russians to hack the election, that was the original charge. We know that it evolved over the years. That was the original charge. Made it. So it made it tougher to do any type of foreign relations. It made it tougher to accomplish anything in Washington, D.C., to get any politicians behind you on anything. It hurt the work of the executive branch. The lie, the rumors, the innuendos, not based on any fact, paralyzed a presidential administration. So, yeah, it would be justifiable that the president would be losing it at times.
Right.
because he knew it was completely false and he couldn't get anything done. He couldn't do his job to the level that he wished to do so. And therefore, that justifies a lot of different outbursts and makes the fact that we now know he didn't coordinate or collude with the Russians, that makes a great case for what his true intent was for his rage, that he was ticked off.
Right. You know, that's what you had. There were a number of people from the liberal media during the day on social media that were talking about, someone who is calm and relaxed and happy isn't innocent. It's the angry person, or isn't guilty, right? That's the innocent type. He was angry, therefore he's guilty.
Guilty, yes, exactly.
Well, I saw that a couple of different times, and I said, no. If I'm being wrongly accused at a level, you have to look at the level of this. This isn't somebody calling you out on social media, Mr. Twitter fan. It's not somebody even in your office saying you did something you didn't do. This is a major investigation of a sitting U.S. president that was founded on zero.
Right. There was nothing ever there.
I would give the president an award for his restraint. There's no telling how far off the rails I would have gone every single day.
Well, yeah, I think of it as somebody, if the media was out there and you had other government officials saying, I need to be investigated because I committed treason.
Right.
I mean, I can't tell you the rage that I would feel if I was accused of that, and many other people that are listening right now, you would feel the same thing. You would feel completely and totally enraged, and so you might be out of control.
And by the way, this is right out of the left playbook, because I suspect, I can't show this, but I suspect that at least a few of them that were involved in this looked at this as a guy coming in, and what did the Wall Street Journal, when they went into Harlem the day after the election, find? They found people that said, even that they didn't vote for him, but they asked, why do you think he won over Hillary? And they said, well, he was talking about problems here at home. She was talking about things outside the U.S. Here was a guy who, whether you liked the solutions or not, whether you liked what he was going to do or not, was focused on the United States. Well, what better way to tear down his base than to try and prove that he committed treason.
And the other point that was brought up is, most Democrats actually don't believe he ever did it. They're just, it's much easier to believe that there was an excuse that Trump somehow hacked the election. It just emotionally satisfies you.
Yes.
Satisfies you that, because you can't believe that Hillary lost, and therefore this guy had to do it in some kind of cheating way, and it makes you feel good if you can fall back on that excuse.
That's a conspiracy theory mindset. We talked about it. You can't wrap your mind around the hijackers on 9/11 and what they did. So you have to, in your mind, come up with something that is false.
Right, Bush did.
Because you can't deal with the fact, you emotionally can't handle the fact that there are evil people that want us dead in the world. In this case, you can't handle the fact that Donald Trump defeated Hillary Clinton when everyone in the media was telling you there was no doubt she was going to win. And on top of that, Berner, she won the popular vote, and you just can't wrap your brain around how he became president.
Your calls next, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on trip planning. All drivers know that finding secure parking spots is an increasing problem. Let's consider ways to win the parking battle, like pre-planning when and where you will stop. Download a truck parking app that helps identify available spaces. Start your day earlier and grab spots before they're filled. Find a well-lit area, like a truck stop or a department store lot, if allowed or permitted, that's less appealing to thieves. Secure your truck by closing windows. Use window screens or shades. Be sure to hide your valuables. Use anti-theft devices like a container, fifth wheel, and air brake locks, and use an in-cab camera to document suspicious activity. Staying safe and within the hours of service is important. Having a sound parking strategy helps with both. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We go to Rich in Houston, Texas. Rich, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Got a question for you. You know, they say it's a completed report, and obviously the collusion part's completed, but we had an incomplete report on the obstruction.
No, you didn't.
We all know it
was. No, you didn't.
And
you didn't have an incomplete. No, you didn't have an incomplete report. Mueller said that he wasn't going to use normal prosecutorial standards here, and he was going to hand it off to let the attorney general make the decision. Mueller didn't do his job. Mueller said, "I'm not going to do my job, and I'll have the attorney general do my job."
Right.
And the attorney general looked at the evidence, said, "You don't have enough evidence to get a conviction here."
In fact, from the report, because we determined not to make a traditional prosecutorial judgment.
That's your only job.
That's
your only job.
That's
is to make
the only reason.
You're a prosecutor. Your job is to make it. And he said, "I'm not going to make a prosecutor's judgment here." Well, that's your job. You either have enough to indict or you don't have enough to indict. And he didn't have enough to indict. And he didn't have the guts to say it. It's that simple.
So in other words, he didn't complete his report by saying, "I don't have enough."
No, he said, well, the report's complete. He didn't have enough. And his excuse was, "Well, I'm not going to follow the normal prosecutorial standards here. And so I will give it," as he said, "I will give it to the attorney general to make that decision." The attorney general made the decision. Report complete.
Right. It's an incomplete. I would give him an incomplete if he was taking a test.
Well, that's fine. That's your opinion. That's your stubborn opinion, but that's not based on fact.
No, it's not.
That's your stubborn opinion. Well, I'm just not going to believe it because I wish not to believe it. But legally, it's done. It's over.
It is over. And if he had found something, then they would absolutely. If he had found evidence of obstruction, they would have moved on that.
Right.
There is no doubt.
That's like saying, you know something, I'm not going to do, I'm a talk show host, but we're not going to do our talk show today because we'll hand it over to somebody else.
Yeah.
Well, your only job is to do a talk show. His only job as a prosecutor is to find evidence to indict or charge. That's
right.
It.
Right.
That's it. That's his only job. His job isn't to give an opinion or a political opinion or just be wishy-washy here. You either have the evidence or you don't have the evidence.
Well, it's,
that's your job.
It's real simple. It is a yes or no.
Yes. And he said, "I'm not going to say yes or no."
Well, because ask yourself this. If he had evidence that it was obstruction.
He would have stated it was.
Then do you think he would say, "We found evidence of obstruction, but no reasonable prosecutor would go after him"? No. No. You have to ask yourself what's more likely. That he has nothing? Well, you can read the report. And he had nothing on obstruction.
Right. And by the way, what you're saying is you don't believe Mueller. Mueller said, "I'm not going to make the normal prosecutorial judgment. I will hand it over to the attorney general to do that." The attorney general did that. He followed Mueller's instructions. Report complete. Done.
Right.
The legal part of it is over. You now, to our last caller, Rich in Houston, politically, it's not over. It will never be over. There will be people. Look, there are still the majority of Democrats from the last poll in last fall still believe that the Russians hacked into the election machines.
Right.
So it doesn't matter if you abide by the truth or not. You can live in a make-believe world. You can live as the majority of Democrats last fall were living in the delusional world that the Russians hacked into the election machines without any evidence whatsoever. You can live in that world. You can't make the statement that this is not legally complete. It's legally complete. It's over.
Right.
It's done.
If they had found evidence that the president committed obstruction of justice and he committed that crime, they would know it.
Right. They would have recommended indictment afterwards.
Yes. But
he didn't have
politically, he was doing what this entire thing was designed to do. Hanging the cloud of doubt over the president.
Yep.
Did he have evidence or not? The answer is no,
nope.
He did not.
Listening to Red Eye Radio from the Pilot Flying J Studios.
And he's Eric Carley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Interesting here, tying up loose ends. Remember that January 18th BuzzFeed story that claimed that Michael Cohen told the special counsel that after the election, the president personally instructed him to lie? Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
By claiming that negotiations ended months earlier than they actually did in order to obscure Trump's involvement. The story claimed that Mueller's office learned about Trump's directive for Cohen to lie to Congress through interviews with multiple witnesses of the Trump organization and internal company emails, text messages, and other documents. Cohen then acknowledged those instructions during his interviews with that office. BuzzFeed touted the story as the first known example of Trump explicitly telling a subordinate to lie directly about his own dealings with Russia. And remember the special counsel then actually came out with their report and said that story isn't true. Remember that?
Yep.
They actually came out. Then there was such a shock. Well, Robert Mueller's report on the Russia investigation directly contradicts that story that claimed Mueller had evidence that President Donald Trump directed Michael Cohen to lie to Congress about a potential Moscow real estate deal. Mueller's report states that Cohen said that he and the president did not explicitly discuss whether Cohen's testimony about the Trump Tower Moscow project would be or was false, and the president did not direct him to provide false testimony. Cohen also said and told the special counsel he did not tell the president about the specifics of his planned testimony. Because I'm getting some emails, what about the whole Cohen thing? Well, apparently you just paid attention to the one part of the story and not when the special counsel came out. Was that a day later when the special counsel came out?
Yeah.
It was very, very quick because it was unprecedented. People said, wow, special counsel came out and said, that story is false.
Yep. Yeah, and that I think that was the only time they ever issued any statement on any of that, any of the stories. That
I got some correspondence out there. What about telling Cohen to lie? That's obstruction. It's like, no. That wasn't true.
Mueller said it wasn't true. Mueller's team officially at that time issued a statement.
Issued that. And then in the report, it's in the report also. So it's important to get that out. I understand that you're trying to hang on to anything. I understand that. Believe me, I understand.
Well, because you were sold a bill of goods by the media that this was going to turn into something. False reports like that came out. You didn't follow up to see if they were true. You didn't pay attention to even the fact that the Mueller team came out and said that's bogus. And if someone sold you a bill of goods, that's on them. They're the ones that said that helped to create this false narrative. Mueller helped it in the report. I mean, just the writings in the... And how he phrased certain things on obstruction, letting it hang out there. The question is, did he find any evidence of it? And the question and the answer is no, he didn't. You know, this the entire thing is, and I asked the question yesterday or day before. How do you get away from the activist in a person? How do you separate the activist in a person, especially in the legal setting? It's extremely important when we talk about the law, we talk about prosecutors, we talk about investigators, we talk about defense lawyers, judges, or any of them. Now, we all know the activist judges that are out there. We know that that exists. The reason that it's important to point it out is because it can easily get to the point, and often does get to the point, of violating the rights of U.S. citizens. You talk about that kind of power over somebody's life, and it is unbelievable what lengths people will go to today, and it's only growing.
Well, we talk about the last caller. Well, I'm not going to believe that it's over. Well, of course you're not going to believe it's over,
right?
Because you're an activist.
Go write your own narrative.
Yeah, you're not. And this is the whole thing with Mueller, as we were trying to explain to the last caller. The only reason he existed as a special counsel is to look at the evidence and say there's enough to charge somebody or indict somebody with a crime. It's the only reason he existed.
Right.
He didn't exist to write a book or set a political narrative or write a story that Democrats could hold on to their hope to, that we can get this president on something. That's not why he existed. So the you said it a long, long time ago when I first started working with you, that if the premise is wrong, everything afterwards may seem correct, but if the original precedent is wrong, then everything that follows it is perverted and tainted because of it, and you can't trust. And that's the case here, where Mueller states, without any reason why, well, we didn't follow our normal prosecutorial...
Yeah, because we determined not to make a traditional prosecutorial judgment.
Why?
Right.
Why not? Why? That's the only reason you exist. Why is... That would be the question I would ask. Why didn't Mueller, and if Mueller does testify, I'd love to hear that from one of the Republicans, because a Democrat will never ask that question.
Okay,
they'll never ask that question.
This also gets back to last fall. We were talking about what the report might be. It could be, well, we didn't find anything, but there's the wagging of the finger. That's exactly what this paragraph that deals with obstruction is. It ends with, accordingly, while this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him, wagging his finger. Yeah, it does, because you didn't act on it.
Yeah, it actually does. If you don't act on it as a prosecutor, if you don't charge, it means you don't have the evidence.
Right.
You don't have the evidence. You don't have the intent. You don't have what it takes to prosecute somebody in the United States of America.
Right.
And you don't have the guts to say that.
Right. You decided to do what the left has been doing all along with this entire equation and continue to hang the cloud of doubt over his head.
Instead of doing your job,
right,
which is, sorry, not enough evidence to prosecute.
We did not find that there was evidence to prosecute here to move forward. End of story. What were your findings?
You didn't find enough to prosecute.
We determined not to make a traditional prosecutorial judgment. I'm sorry, what's your job? Special prosecutor.
Right. That's your only job.
It's just maddening. Oh yeah, I decided not to call the plays or anything. And what's your job? I'm the coach of the team.
But the other thing, and again, I haven't read all the 400 pages. But what I want to see is if they specifically get into the specifics of why we didn't exonerate him. Why? Specifically, what was the charge in those 10? Now, I've read the 10 different things that they have brought up. Mm-hmm. I don't see how they explain collusion.
Right.
There is no collusion in there.
Right.
There's no charge. There is no criminal corrupt charge that you can make out of any of the 10 examples that they give.
Yeah, right.
Because there's no obstruction of justice there by what the law states. So what's your point of not exonerating him? That you just couldn't figure out his intent? Well, if there was no crime, could his intent have possibly been to cover up a non-crime?
Right. Or could it be that he was just venting over somebody that is completely incompetent? Given the nature of this current president. I'm going with that one.
Prosecutors like this scare the daylights out of me.
They do. And this is my whole point. Because you cannot, it's impossible to separate the activist from the person that is in the role doing someone who's supposed to be doing a specific job. And when it comes to justice, this is the Justice Department. When it comes to justice, it must be done. You have to leave it at the door. Going back years ago, decades ago when I first started radio, your boss would always tell you, leave it at the door. If your dog died, you need to sound happy when you're on the air. All right? Well, that doesn't affect people's lives and rights. That's what we were taught. Now think of it as, I'm an investigator. I'm an agent at the FBI. I'm a prosecutor. I'm a judge. You leave your personal beliefs at the door. You can interpret the law and act accordingly, and we have a system to vet that. And sometimes there still is an injustice, but nothing like someone who in their mind is a person, in their heart, is hell-bent on going after U.S. citizens for political gain. That's tragic. Nothing short of it.
Trump was asked whether he thinks Robert Mueller acted honorably, and the president replied, yes, he did. The president is wrong.
Right.
He did not. By doing that on obstruction of justice, he did not act honorably. His only job was to prosecute, not to sit there and make the case that the burden of proof is on the suspect to prove that they're innocent, and that's what he did. That is not honorable in any way. Mr. President, if I were you, I would retract that.
And I'm tired of hearing all of those that, I have a great deal of respect for Bob Mueller. Nope.
Nope.
The one paragraph that we have been focused on this hour. I'm sorry, professionally, I don't know the guy personally. Professionally, zero respect. None.
866-90-RED-EYE. If you want to get in, let us head right to you. We go to Robert in New York City. Robert, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Just wanted to point out there seems to be a huge disparity in justice. Hillary seems to have used bleach bed and hammers to destroy evidence and selling uranium to Russia.
Well, look. Here's the point. When we talk about Hillary, we'll talk about her. We want to talk the specifics of this particular case. We have talked about Hillary many, many times before, and what we feel was the. But to compare one case to another gets you nowhere.
Right.
I don't want to waste your time pointing the finger at another case. Right.
Stay focused on this case.
Yeah.
Not that that doesn't warrant attention, but we've given that attention and may again. Yeah. At some point,
let's go to Roy in Carson City, Nevada. Roy, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Yes. I don't know if this is related to the discussion tonight, but I think it's worth bringing up. And it's first of all, it's when did the investigation begin or the predicate? Secondly, it would be where did it come from? And thirdly, deals with the dossier itself. Now, the conclusion that I came to is that it only could have, or the investigation itself only could have taken place once Donald Trump became the front runner. So,
well, it was around March is when they first started looking at Carter Page, right?
March
of 2016.
Right,
so, of course, you're more likely to do opposition research and go after somebody when they become a front runner,
When you believe that there's
right.
Here's a question. Could there have been any kind of, I'm sure there was oppo research on all of it.
Yes.
But could there have been any other kind of activity that we believe crossed the line with any of the other candidates? Possibly, but it's not known.
Yeah. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. If you'd like to get in, we have a line open, and it's the Friday show, so we want to get to as many people as possible now that the legal portion of the Mueller report is complete. We know we have some people that wish to argue with us, but it's not worth arguing. We already had that argument. Legally, it's done. Politically, it might never be done until the president is out of office, because you have some Democrats that just keep moving the goalpost, as we know, each and every week that goes by. And then it is expected that they will do that. What I hope is it will just energize Republicans and others out there to expose and make it as transparent as possible. What happened? How did this all happen? Right. What happened at the FBI? What happened at the CIA? What happened in the Department of Justice? What happened? What was behind the FISA warrant? Let's get the Inspector General's report out there. Let's get the Attorney General and his team together to find out what happened in all of this. Let's get the criminal referrals from the Republican portion of the House Intelligence Committee. Let's get Lindsey Graham going on his. And if Adam Schiff wishes to continue an obstruction of justice probe in the House, go for it. Make as much noise as you wish to make. Go for it. Let's get as much transparency as we can out on all of this.
Well, and I think really there is there clearly is that mission in place already from the AG. He referred to it again in his statement on Thursday morning. The question is, what else will we learn from this? What will he find in terms of evidence?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. We say the world because listen to our podcast. Yeah.
We do podcasts, RedEyeRadioShow.com.
And streaming, because it's the daytime in other places of the world.
Right. So. You can subscribe even. Apple Podcasts. You know, a lot of people have been doing that for a long time, subscribing. You forget about that, but it's like, hey, why did my Apple subscription thing stop? And I'm like, you have to talk to Apple. But you can subscribe, Google Podcasts and everything else.
Where am I making any money off it?
Yeah, you are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Just want to make sure.
Right.
Yeah, you are. When I hear, I'm sorry.
I know I am.
I'm sorry. I'm in the cable. I'm in the cable satellite mindset right now. Somebody's subscribing. That means I must be making money, especially if I'm on that network, right?
Uh-huh.
I do this for the love of it, not the money.
I do it strictly for the money.
All right. Now that we've, that I've BS'd you, Eric didn't. Let's continue. You want to hear? You want to have some fun?
Sure.
Let's have some fun. Let's listen to presidential candidate Eric Swalwell. All right?
All right.
On everything that's going on.
The Attorney General should resign immediately. He can either be the Attorney General of the United States or the president's lawyer. He can't be both, and he...
you want more?
Sure.
Okay.
He is a double-digit obstructor by Bob Mueller's count, and the conduct during the campaign, the transition, and even as president with the Russians does not meet the standard of conduct we want from a president of the United States. I would not take it off the table.
All right, so impeachment not off the table for Swalwell. How about Adam Schiff?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Let's hear from Adam Schiff. Okay, here we go.
The evidence would have to be quite overwhelming and demonstrable, and such that it would generate bipartisan support for the idea that it renders the president unfit for office. Now, many of us do think the president's unfit for office, but unless that's a bipartisan conclusion, an impeachment would be doomed to failure. I continue to think that a failed impeachment is not in the national interest.
Wait a minute. You said you had the evidence. That's yeah. Adam Schiff.
Come on.
You said you have the evidence of collusion.
You can do it.
That you had the evidence of collusion, and therefore, if you have the evidence of collusion, how many times did Adam Schiff say that he has seen the evidence?
It's been there.
Why isn't Adam Schiff going to the media and stating that Mueller did not do his job? Because if Adam Schiff saw the evidence of collusion, why didn't Robert Mueller?
Well, here's my question. Why does April 2019 Adam Schiff have a problem with everything up until April 2019 Adam Schiff?
This is just too easy. All right, let's hear from the guy who once compared U.S. soldiers to the mass genocidal maniac Pol Pot.
All
here
right.
is Dick Durbin from Illinois.
Certainly Mr. Mueller had the opportunity to say there was no obstruction of justice. He did not. He said he couldn't reach a conclusion as to whether that occurred. There were incidents which he cited but didn't conclude that they related an obstruction of justice. He left that as an open question. The question is now open for the United States.
He just contradicted himself in one sentence.
Yes.
This is just too much fun. Oh, man, this is greatness.
Well, because
he contradicted himself in yes. one in the same sentence.
Right, yes. Oh, it definitely is obstruction, but he couldn't come to the conclusion. By the way, yes, because it's not the special prosecutor. It's the special, let us think about it. Let us ponder whether this is let us talk like it's some kind of law professor having a discussion in
right.
class or something.
Yes, exactly.
It's bizarre.
It really is, because that's what they're trying to. He's and it's very, very simple. Again, we understand. What was that latest report came out, though? Remember, we're talking to a significant portion, not our loyal listeners, but the fringe that come on from the left that have no idea what's going on. You see, they did another one of what Americans don't know.
Yeah,
there's a new one out there today.
Right.
That we're clueless on it. We have no idea how the government runs. So that's why I've been talking about this at times. We had the one gentleman earlier. Well, the Mueller investigation isn't complete. Yeah, it is. It's complete.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't say it's complete. Well, yeah, I can, because legally it's complete. It's done. He's done. He's done his job. It's over. The Department of Justice deals with legal things, not political things. Now, politically, it may not be over for you, but legally, it's over. Yeah. Well. He didn't exonerate. His job is not to exonerate. That's stupid. That's almost like saying that my job is to score goals.
Goal.
You know. Well, you know, I'm not going to comment on this today because my job is, my job is to score goals. Or I'm not going to talk about this today because my job is not to score touchdowns. What are you talking about? One has nothing to do with the other. That's what Mueller was saying when he was stating that they were not going to go through the normal prosecutorial procedures here. Well, why not? Nobody asked that question. The premise was wrong. You're a prosecutor. Your only job was to do one thing. Look at the evidence and then say indict or not indict. That's it.
Pretty simple.
Pretty simple. And since you didn't say indict, well, then you didn't have enough evidence. Job is done.
Because he's either politically driven or he's completely incompetent.
One or the other.
We report, you decide.
Well, I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's just, it's not going to end. This is not going to. All right, here it is. Okay, the Heritage Foundation.
All right, what do you have?
Is America turning into a nation of dunces?
Yes.
10% of college graduates surveyed thought that Judge Judy is currently serving on the Supreme Court of the United States.
Yeah, of course they did.
Half of college graduates don't know how long the terms are for representatives or senators. Well, forever.
Yes. Right. It depends on which ones you're talking about. Nancy and Chuck, forever.
Watch Heritage Foundation says, we'll accept that answer.
Yeah.
2 years and 6 years. Two out of five don't know that Congress has the power to declare war.
Wow. Okay. With the president or?
One in ten think that Congress could actually outlaw atheism because the United States is one country under God. Wow. Let me see. More Americans can name the Three Stooges than the three branches of government.
Why I oughta? Yeah.
Three times as many can identify the city with the zip code 90210. Than the city where the Constitution of the United States was written.
Of course they can.
And as we all know, the Constitution was written in San Antonio.
Yes.
Julian Castro wrote the Constitution of the United States.
Actually, he's rewriting it. Along with a few friends.
Let me see. Barely half, only 53% of Americans know that the first 10 amendments are called the Bill of Rights in the Constitution. A third, 33%, cannot name one right protected by the First Amendment.
Well,
you ready for this?
I don't know.
One in a third cannot name a single right protected by the First Amendment, and what many do know is wrong. For example, more than one in ten Americans say the Bill of Rights protects the right to own a pet.
Okay.
This one makes sense. You're all going to cry when you hear this, but this one makes sense, and this one makes perfect sense. It's one of the reasons that we're doomed, but it still makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. Only 35% know that the first three words of the Constitution are "We the People." By way of comparison, two-thirds think that it was the American founders, not Karl Marx, who penned the phrase "from each according to his ability to each according to his needs." And actually put those words in the Constitution of the United States.
Huh. What did his brother Groucho put in?
We're doomed.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
See, even if you watch Seinfeld, and you should know that, because Kramer was walking down the street with Mickey one day, and they were discussing Karl Marx.
Yeah, right.
And they were discussing that particular line.
And, by the way, each of these individuals has a very strong opinion on the Mueller report.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's truly frightening is how the stunning ignorance with the Constitution has bred contempt. If put to a vote today, only half of those surveyed said they would vote to adopt the Constitution.
Wow. Yeah. Right.
Wow. Even fewer believe that Congress should follow the Constitution.
Well, I mean, there you have it. Nobody cares. It is not part of it. If you're an activist, you only want what you want. That's the end of it. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I need to get what's mine. And it doesn't. This is why journalism doesn't matter. This is why the law doesn't matter. This is why the process doesn't matter and won't be respected until that mindset changes. Why respect the process if you don't respect the Constitution?
Well, if you don't even know it.
Then if you believe it doesn't matter at all, then the process doesn't matter. There you have the Kavanaugh situation. Anything else? Well, you have the current situation with, the last 2 years.
Well, we have said it. We said it before, and in all seriousness, I mean, when you have the majority of, I said a third of Americans could name a single right. I've seen other polls that show a majority cannot, but whatever. You have a significant number of Americans that can't tell you a single right in the First Amendment. We know that the left doesn't believe in freedom of speech for all, just for some, which means they don't believe in freedom of speech. They don't believe in freedom of religion. They don't believe in the Second Amendment. They don't believe in due process under the law. They don't understand the three branches of government, which means they don't understand about the separation of powers, which means they don't understand about judicial activism and why it was wrong. They don't believe, as we saw in Kavanaugh, and we're seeing now. You're seeing it now. You're seeing it yesterday. You know, the whole concept of a presumption of innocence. You know, you and I had the discussion about Mueller not doing his job. Most people don't. Most people in this country, our listeners do, but most people in this country don't understand how wrong that is. What he did by not doing his job and setting the premise that, well, we decided not to follow our normal prosecutorial standards here. Why not? That's your only job. That's why you were put in to do what you were doing right now. That's part of the law. You're supposed to be doing this. And you just said, no, I don't feel like doing this. I'm going to become a writer, or I'm going to be somebody who keeps a narrative going in this country because of whatever reason. I can't tell you what reason he decided not to do his job, because he didn't state why he wouldn't do his reason, why he wouldn't fulfill his responsibility. He didn't say.
Right.
Now, we can imagine that he knew what it would cause. He knew that, as soon as Barr did it, it would cause this whole thing that, well, it's just the president exonerating himself, which isn't the case at all. They use terms that have nothing to do with a prosecutor's job. Exoneration, that's not a legal term. Prosecutor's job is to do one thing, and that is to look at a case and decide whether the evidence exists to file charges or not. Not to give their opinion on the full innocence or guilt of a person. It's, do you have the evidence to charge?
Right.
And he wouldn't do that. Why not? Because he didn't have the evidence. Legally, the case is closed for everybody who was objecting that today, including a listener and a couple of emailers. Well, it's just what you're saying. No, it's not what we're just saying. Mueller is done. Mueller is not coming back. He's not going to go back and do, well, okay, the guy's called Red Eye and wrote to Red Eye and said that the case isn't complete yet, and so it's time for me to come back. It's done.
Yeah, right.
I feel frustrated having to explain this over and over again.
Well, because, again, you can't separate the activist from the person, which means, and if it doesn't matter who you are, where you are, what role you serve in this entire thing, the activist in you, if you can't separate that from the facts, doesn't care about the facts.
If you want to get in, lines open now. What do you think about the Mueller report? Is it over? What should happen now? What would you like to see happen now? 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara.
It is outrageous the way that the media and Democrats have behaved. And frankly, the meltdown that we saw unfold on TV today is truly astonishing. But it's a great day in America, not just because it's a great day for the president, but it's a good thing when they can say that not just the president, not just his campaign, but no American was involved in colluding with a foreign government. And it's a sad day in America when Democrats and members of the liberal media are sad that it didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great way to put it.
One of the greatest points Alan Dershowitz wrote about yesterday, we'll have that coming up following the bottom of the hour.
Here is your forecast.
Well, the start to the weekend is going to see more severe thunderstorms for the south after moving through Texas yesterday. This early morning Friday, we'll see those showers having moved eastward, now in along the border of Georgia and Alabama. And the likelihood of severe weather will extend all the way from the coast up to about Chattanooga. And we can expect a rough day of weather throughout the south today, moving through Macon and Albany, Georgia, into Atlanta later today. By your Saturday, we'll see those showers having moved again eastward and provide a good chance of rain for the Carolinas up through the Delmarva Peninsula and on into New York. However, the likelihood of severe weather will diminish somewhat as those showers, primarily in the east, will be moving through in overnight hours. With the exception of some rain in the state of Washington, the rest of the country west of the Mississippi looks gorgeous today with plenty of high pressure and sunshine. The National Forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
You're listening to Red Eye Radio from the Pilot Flying J Studios. Listening to Red Eye Radio from the Pilot Flying J Studios.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Really interesting from thehill.com, Alan Dershowitz writing, Attorney General William Barr and Special Counsel Robert Mueller apparently have a fundamental disagreement over whether a president can be charged with obstruction of justice if he merely engaged in an act authorized by the Constitution but with an improper motive. Barr takes the view, a view that Dershowitz has argued for many months, that the act requirement of a crime cannot be satisfied by a constitutionally authorized action of the president, such as firing the FBI director James Comey. Mueller takes the view that a constitutionally authorized act can be turned into a crime if it is improperly motivated. Mueller's view is extreme and dangerous to civil liberties because it creates pure thought crimes. According to Mueller, the corrupt motive is the crime because surely the constitutionally authorized act cannot be criminal. When we talk about normal obstruction of justice, and we've always used Watergate, for example, there was a break-in to Democrat headquarters. Now, the president, Nixon, didn't know about it at the time, but tried to cover it up, tried to destroy evidence. So you had two crimes. You had the original crime, which was a crime that was spelled out. And then you had the crime of destroying evidence. The president doesn't have a constitutionally mandated authority to destroy evidence. Right. And that isn't specified anywhere. So you've got two crimes. That's a slam dunk obstruction of justice. In this case, you never had a crime. There was never an identifiable crime that ever existed that the president did this. They were searching for a crime, but they never even found what the allegation of a crime is. So they were just always searching to see if the president committed a crime, not knowing. They weren't looking at the president as a suspect in a crime that they could identify. They were just looking for any crime that the president may have committed, which we believe in itself was wrong. But what Mueller is saying is, Dershowitz is saying is that if there is no original crime, and what you're saying is that, well, the president constitutionally is authorized to fire Mueller, well, then the crime is strictly the intent of something that is lawful on an investigation of a non-crime.
Let's say you have a server in his home, President Trump. No one would ever do this. But let's say he had a server in his home, and then all of a sudden, whoops, he just accidentally deleted tens of thousands of emails that were part of, you know, of, I don't know, evidence or something. You can commit a crime, even if you don't know you're committing a crime. Actually, what this gets back to, and it's an interesting point by Dershowitz, remember the back and forth. We talked about this earlier. The back and forth, this was last year, about this time we were learning it, that the special counsel's team had reached out to the personal attorney for the president in terms of what questions they would like to ask, and this was being reported widely. Now, if accurate, we have to, that's a huge asterisk on this one, because how much has been inaccurately reported? But it was widely reported that they were, one of the things they were focusing on was, what was your intent when you fired James Comey?
Mm-hmm.
That was going to be one of the questions. What Dershowitz is pointing out is that it, let's assume that, that that those reports were true and accurate. And Dershowitz is going through this 400 pages, and he's looking at it, and he's saying to himself, wow, they actually were exploring, trying to get into the thought of what the president was thinking. What were you thinking when you fired James Comey? Because, and this, we actually told, you know, we were, you know, as we do sometimes, giving advice to the president, look, don't tweet or comment about an ongoing investigation or case, especially specific details or anything else. And then, of course, with things like, you know, Comey, of course, there's been plenty of tweets over the years about James Comey that could come back to haunt you in a case. In other words, could they use that? But see, the special counsel couldn't even get to the point where they were using his social media to help define his thought, his intent. They were reaching, according to the Alan Dershowitz here in this article, they're reaching into this territory of essentially, because they couldn't, and I suspect, by the way, because the president's all over the place, just what I said yesterday, they really couldn't get a grasp of what he was thinking, when he was thinking, because nobody can. He's kind of all over the place, and he's frantic, and he's very reactionary and everything else. So imagine that. They're looking at it. They've got all of the evidence. They printed off all the tweets, and they're looking at it, trying to look at the verbiage and all of this, trying to prove intent, and they still couldn't do it. So then the stories came out that, again, early last year, they were looking at, one of the questions they wanted to ask was, what were you thinking? What was in your mind? What was your intent when you fired Comey? What were you essentially trying to accomplish? And the fact of the matter is that if you put those two together, what Dershowitz's, his analysis on that part of it, and that report that they were going to ask those questions, then yeah, they're looking to, because there is no crime. Firing an FBI director is not a crime.
Even firing Mueller was not, it would not have been a
no,
crime.
No, that wouldn't have been a crime. See, this is what this
or,
is.
Or telling, not, or him telling the his attorney to tell Rosenstein to fire Mueller. That in itself isn't a crime, even if he fired them, which he did not.
Right.
He did not do it.
Right.
But here's the point of where it becomes completely and totally political on Mueller's part. The intent is much, even if you do want to punish a speech, or, you know, a thought crime, not a speech crime, but a thought crime, once you find out there was no collusion, doesn't that clarify intent? Once in your own investigation, where you interview hundreds upon hundreds of witnesses, where the your suspect of a crime that you cannot identify cooperates fully, doesn't claim executive privilege, lets you talk to everybody except himself because he's trying to avoid a perjury trap, which now when you see how Mueller wouldn't make a decision on it as a prosecutor must and made it political, I believe the president was totally justified now not speaking, you know, to the special prosecutor.
Right, right.
Totally justified.
Right.
But the fact is the intent becomes clearer once you've done your own investigation and find out there was no evidence of any collusion, not only with the president, but nobody in his campaign and nobody in the United States of America, not one American citizen. And you're still wondering what the intent is where you say you can't make a decision. That's bogus.
Well, how many times, and what did you mention earlier where, and I forget what the issue was, regarding this, the Mueller report, where they were just stretching it. They were really stretching it.
Oh, on the Trump Tower meeting and trying to make
a campaign
finance violation.
Right.
Which was
the
just asinine.
That's when it's Trump Jr. meeting. That anything that would have benefited, if it had been Oppo research, that Veselnitskaya gave to Trump Jr., dirt on Hillary, that would have benefited, that benefit has a value, therefore it is an illegal contribution according to campaign finance law. Wow. Now look at this. Now look at this part of it.
Exactly.
Thank you, Alan Dershowitz. Because in the report, they go back to the actual law that they're talking about when it comes to obstruction. Whoever corruptly or by threats or force or by any threatening letter or communication influences, obstructs, or impedes or endeavors to influence, obstruct, or impede the due administration. That is somebody who is, at that point, they're violating that law, anybody who does that. But what they didn't have is any actual action. This is what Kimberly Strassel pointed that out in a series of tweets on Thursday morning, Wall Street Journal. She had a series of tweets, and we talked about this earlier this week. And that is separating the words of the president from the actions of the president.
Right.
But especially with this president, as we kind of, before the show ended yesterday, rounded off with, well, wait a minute, with his tweets, with his statements, it would be almost impossible to prove intent because he's all over the place. Because he's very reactive. His nature is to be very reactive. But Mueller and his team were actually bound by the law, the letter of the law here. And I'm guessing greatly frustrated because of that. And so what they were doing, couple that with what Dershowitz is saying, and this is just my theory, but I think it's a sound theory. Dershowitz is saying they're exploring, essentially punishing the thought.
Yes.
Because there was no illegal action because it didn't rise to that. There was zero evidence of that. So the idea was to go after thought. They were bound by the actual letter of the law, but because they were frustrated and explored everything, including punishing the thought. Couple that with the story that about this time last year that the special counsel was discussing questions that they would like to ask the president, including what were you thinking, what was your intent when you fired Comey.
And you get to the point of what Dershowitz is talking about, which is we're trying to punish not actions, which, again, they didn't have the guts to go through. You know why? You know, it sounds like you've had attorneys, you know, on his staff that aren't happy with the way the current U.S. law is and wishes it could be different, that they could punish thought crime. but they knew it'd get blown out of court, and any lawyer would throw this out of court, and the federal judge would just, could you imagine going to a federal judge and destroying a presidential administration? Because if they said they were going to indict him for obstruction of justice afterwards, he would be impeached.
Right. Yeah.
If that would have come down, he would have been impeached for that. And you probably would have, the Republicans would have gone along with it. Okay, the Mueller says we need to impeach for that. Imagine when the federal judge gets a hold of this, that the Department of Justice, that a special prosecutor was attempting to punish a thought crime that brought down a presidential administration. Could you imagine the repercussions of that?
Of what he was thinking.
Of what he was thinking.
Because at one point in the report, they actually talk about, on the collusion side, they talk about even two people, two parties, meeting together, discussing, and one reacting to. This really had more to do with the Trump Tower meeting. In other words, somebody reaching out to Trump Jr., hey, she'd like to sit down and talk about dirt on Hillary. And he thinks, oh, okay, great. Him actually reacting to that, sitting down with her, is, and those two, that is not collusion. That doesn't rise to collusion. You would have to actually demonstrate the plan, the entire plan, and actions of numerous individuals. In the report, it says it would go beyond just two people.
Right. So they were looking for campaign finance violations.
Yes. And oh, so they were stretching every single aspect. No wonder it took 2 years.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. I know it's at times it might get a little bit tedious, but we think it's important to explain exactly where the prosecution was going in this case, the prosecutor, the special prosecutor, because we really believe it's important to understand if you have federal prosecutors out there and somebody like Mueller who is attempting to punish thought crimes, mm-hmm. if that's what they're looking to do, or if they're attempting to take a campaign finance law and stretch it to complete and total absurdity, which was never the intent of any law to begin with. And right. and that's what seems what was going on here, because you could, this obviously was not your run-of-the-mill obstruction of justice case.
No.
Or even collusion case or espionage case.
Right.
Because there was never a crime identified to begin with. But we think it's important to point out the dangerous extent that this prosecutor might have been willing to go to.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.